What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Move the Sticks here on a Thursday. Great to be back here with my guys in person. How about a round of applause for these two, the work they did in Indianapolis, in the booth, our lead draft analyst, Daniel Jeremiah, on the field, Bucky Brooks down there getting it done. You guys, fantastic work, as always.
It was fun. It's fun combine. It's great to be back after a year off.
Combine, too, by the way.
Oh, my gosh.
Probably the fastest combine we've ever seen. We're going to get into some of those combine takeaways here in a little bit. But just when you think, guys, like, all right, we're riding the high of the combine on Monday. Like, all right, let's just take a breath. No. Because the news ramped up the energy once again. And that's where we are going to begin here with a little big three action. And look, I feel like there's more stories than that, but the big three are pretty darn big. And it starts with Russell Wilson. At long last, some clarity on his future update. It's going to be as an opponent in Seattle. Russell Wilson now a Denver Bronco. According to Ian Rappaport, Denver, the only place Russ wanted to go. And James Palmer telling me on the NFL Inside Report pod that when Wilson came to Denver to take his physical, people in the building were taken aback by how much homework he had done on the Broncos. Obviously, they had done homework on him, clearly, something that had been in the works here for a few weeks. So let's look at the trade compensation here for Russell Wilson. Two first-round picks, two second-round picks, and a fifth that the Seahawks are sending to Denver. They're also sending players Drew Lock, defensive end Shelby Harris, and a former first-round pick in Noah Fant, the tight end. The Broncos also get a fourth-round pick in addition to a potential future Hall of Fame quarterback in Russell Wilson. DJ, what does this do now for the Broncos right away?
It's a home run. I mean, it is mission accomplished if you're the Broncos. You look at what they're able to get done with this move. It's hard to find a caliber quarterback like Russell Wilson. You just can't find him. They never become available. So to be able to lock him down, this is a top three or four defense in the NFL with the Denver Broncos. So you add in that defense that he has. They've got a running back in Javonte Williams. It's a rising star. The skill position talent that they have. I know the division's stacked. I know the conference is stacked. But in my opinion, this is a Super Bowl caliber team right now.
Look, man, it's a good team. He goes and changes furniture. He gets weapons on the outside in Courtland Sutton, K.J. Hamler, and Jerry Jeudy. But I'm not necessarily convinced that this brings him closer to getting the elusive Super Bowl that he is chasing. We talk about their defense, and their defense was lights out, but Vic Fangio is no longer calling the defense. So I wonder, can they replicate and duplicate what they've been able to do previously? And then from an offensive standpoint, this offensive line, similar to the offensive line that he left, it's not solid. So to me, there's a lot more work to do in Denver to ensure that he has a chance to kind of make a run at the title.
One thing is, to me, when you're looking at margins, right, you're trying to improve in the margins. The gap between what the Broncos were playing with at quarterback and what they're now playing with quarterback is tremendous. So that alone is going to make a huge difference.
And look, as far as compensation goes, I mean, like, this feels like a win. And I get it. They gave up some players in addition to the two first-round picks. But, man, it feels like to get a player of this
that's
caliber,
the cost.
That's a win. But you want to talk about Noah Fant was a first-round pick, fine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they've got Albert Okwuegbunam, who, you know, hasn't been that much of a drop-off from what Fant has given them. I don't know, maybe Seattle really unlocks him, but
I want to go back to when there was talked about Russell Wilson being available. I remember I tweeted out, mm-hmm. I said the Philadelphia Eagles should part with all three of their ones.
Yeah.
And people lost their minds. You can't trade three ones. Well, when you look at trading a top 10 pick, which was higher than anything the Eagles had, and then you got another first round pick, 2 seconds and all those players. Yeah, that's what it would have cost.
But also, let's 100%. Put into perspective that the Seahawks paid two first round picks for Jamal Adams.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I mean, like, think about that. I know there's additional compensation here for Russell Wilson, but, man, it feels like this was not the overly exorbitant type of deal, you know, three first rounds and major, you know, Pro Bowl-type players. So felt like that was a win for the Denver Broncos. How does this become a win for the Seattle Seahawks, DJ? What do they now do with this huge vacancy at quarterback?
Well, in talking to friends around the league, the expectation from every single one of them is that when it's all said and done, Deshaun Watson's going to be the quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks.
Whoa.
That's just the expectation. Now, look, there's obviously the legal hurdles that exist, and that's on its own timeline, so that would have to be resolved. But I haven't talked to anybody that thinks Pete Carroll is going to take this thing down to the studs with John Schneider, and this is going to be a 3 or 4 year rebuild. The expectation, just again, not any personal knowledge of that situation, but everybody in the league, and I'm talking about everybody you talk to, expects this to be the outcome.
Well, when you think about their division and what they just witnessed with Matthew Stafford coming over and what the Rams were able to do, it does make sense that they would follow suit. If they're not going to do the draft and developmental plan, and it probably makes sense for them not to do that considering Pete Carroll's age, look, they need to get a quarterback. And so now you're talking about a younger, dynamic quarterback that can allow them to jumpstart and get right back into the race. They still need to fix their defense. He is used to not playing behind a stellar offensive line because he didn't have one in Houston. You have weapons on the outside and Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. It would give the Seattle Seahawks an opportunity to reset while still focusing on their defense because they still have good quarterback play.
Real quick, if all this stuff were to happen, it's an upgrade in talent at the position. Deshaun Watson
is an
upgrade.
Yes,
you got an extra 4 or 5 years, yeah, you know, of Deshaun Watson in terms of the age gap between those two players. Now, look, tomorrow, Friday, is actually a big day in the Deshaun Watson legal hurdles. They'll try to figure out. They'll have a grand jury to see whether criminal charges will be brought. And look, if that happens, then it's a whole different ballgame. But if no criminal charges for Deshaun Watson, feels like something the Seahawks can figure out. And boy, would that be really interesting up there in the Pacific Northwest. Okay, let's move on to story number two, which is a pretty darn big story.
Oh, hold on.
Although that the Russell Wilson trade kind of swept under the rug a little bit. The whole he loves me not cycle surrounding Aaron Rodgers and his future in Green Bay also coming to a close. Rodgers agreeing to return to the Packers on a deal that, according to Ian Rappaport, although with some pushback from Rodgers, would pay him $200 million over 4 years and make him the highest paid player in NFL history. Take a look here at the highest paid quarterbacks for this coming season. That, if Rodgers gets the $50 million, that would put him $5 million ahead of Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Dak Prescott up there in the 40s as well. And again, those Rodgers details on that contract still, it sounds like there's still some work to be done, but those were the initial numbers from our NFL Network insider, Ian Rappaport. So now what for Rodgers and the Packers? Like, he's back, which it kind of felt like we were moving towards that. But what do they do now to try to get over this hump in the playoffs?
They got to win a Super Bowl. And so what they need to do is they need to figure out how can they play better in the postseason. Back-to-back years, they've been the number one seed. Back-to-back years, they've had home field advantage throughout the postseason, but have not been able to get it done. Part of the reason they have not been able to get it done is, in my estimation, the way that they play is not conducive to playing in January. When you think about championship football in that weather, you have to be able to run the football. When you look at the Packers, the last three playoff losses, we talk about less than 70 rushing yards on the ground, but more indicative of that is they've only had fewer than 16 attempts in each of their last three playoff losses. So they're not even attempting to run the football. They have to be able to run the football to take some of the pressure off Aaron Rodgers, to be able to control the game and give themselves an opportunity to win the game late. They haven't been able to do so. That has to be the focus, not regular season play. How can we build this team to win the postseason?
Yeah, they got to be more balanced. You got to be able to win different styles of games. And when you find yourself into the postseason, there's going to be times where you find yourself one of those muddy, ugly games, which they keep finding themselves in, and they can't win in that environment. So need to be a little bit more physical from that standpoint. I think that's not just running the football. I think getting another big physical weapon to pair with Devontae Adams is a big part of that. But guys, the deck has been cleared. You looked at the video of them playing against the San Francisco 49ers team that beat them last year. They're breaking in a new quarterback. Mm-hmm. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers won the Super Bowl a year back. They're breaking in a new quarterback. Seattle, Russell Wilson's gone. Like, to me, the deck in the NFC has been pretty cleared. So they're going to win that division running away. They're by far the best team. But they're not going to be judged until they start doing something in the postseason. That's what they're going
to
be judged.
And look, and there's still personnel work to be done there in Green Bay. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers was the biggest piece. And now that he is back, that we can kind of figure out the rest of the chips here. But working on a long-term deal for Jaire Alexander to maximize whatever years you end up getting here off this next Aaron Rodgers deal. Same for Devontae Adams. Got to be more than a one-year deal here, right? You know, he's going to be back no matter what since they franchise tagged him. But figuring out a long-term solution there would obviously go a long way to maximizing these last couple of years with Aaron Rodgers. And then, you know, what happens with Darius Smith? But maybe the biggest question mark is, DJ, what now happens with Jordan Love? who they traded up to get in the first round 2 years ago.
Well, I would imagine he's probably going to be on the move, and I don't know that you're really going to be excited with what you get in terms of the compensation. I go back. I know this is going in the Wayback Machine, but remember when the Broncos drafted Tommy Maddox and he was going to send John Elway into retirement? Yeah, well, Elway paid 7 years after that pick, and they ended up parting with Tommy Maddox for a fourth-round pick. I don't think you're getting more than a three, personally, for Jordan Love.
This year, or do you still try to continue? I mean, because Aaron Rodgers, you know, was more than 2 years sitting behind Brett Favre.
They know more than we do, having watched him every single day.
That's the thing.
So they're going to have a better opportunity to make a good decision there. But I would not be surprised if that trade was made and then you brought in a veteran to kind of be that, you know, that emergency guy in case Rodgers got hurt.
So here's what I would say. I would say, like, with Jordan Love and the way they're spending the money on Aaron Rodgers, they need Jordan Love to continue to develop, because this should be a Jimmy Garoppolo situation if you're Jordan Love or if you're advising Jordan Love. Hey, work your tail off. Be ready to play in case you get an opportunity, because a couple things could happen. One, Aaron Rodgers could get hurt. Two, they could win the Super Bowl, and right after winning, he retires. They still would need a quarterback. He needs to be able to play. Jordan Love needs to be ready, because he could still get his opportunity in Green Bay, or it could happen elsewhere.
Aaron Rodgers, though, back with the Packers after all the tumults of the last couple of off seasons. Good to finally put that to rest. Good to put the Wilson trade speculation to rest. But there is some more quarterback. One more trade to get to. QB news continuing with the Colts trading Carson Wentz to the Washington Commanders. And to illustrate just how quick Wentz's tenure in Indy was, the pick the Colts sent to Philly to acquire Wentz last offseason won't be made for another 7 weeks. So there's that. So now let's look at the entirety of the picks that have been shelled out for the services of Carson Wentz in his career. Remember, the Eagles traded all the way up to number 2 to select him out of North Dakota State back in 2016. And then, of course, the Eagles traded him to Indy, and now what the Commanders have. He's commanded 3 first-round picks, 2 second-round picks, 4 thirds, and a fourth. Mm. That's got to be like an all-timer.
That's a lot of compensation.
That is a ton of compensation. But, Bucky, how do you feel like Wentz works out here with the Commanders?
You know, I don't know, because I think he steps into a worse situation, and I don't know if he's an upgrade over what they were playing with a season ago. Yes, he's more talented than the quarterbacks that are there, but I don't know if he's going to be a better leader than the guys that were there. Because remember, by all accounts, this is a guy that was supported by the Philadelphia Eagles front office and by Frank Reich of the Indianapolis Colts, yet both franchises moved on from him. So Carson Wentz has to dig deep and kind of figure out what is going on. Why is he not able to kind of retain the QB1 spot? It may be on the field, it may be off the field, but regardless, he has to figure it out, because going into Washington, they need him to be QB1 and a leader, and I just don't know if he's built like that right now.
Yeah, once upon a time, we talked about on the podcast, you know, we probably dig it up and find it, but I thought he was going to be one of the top 3 quarterbacks in the NFL at one point in time in his career. I no longer feel that way.
You did a whole show on Goff versus Wentz.
I know, and look where how both this they ended up. But to me, I am legit worried about the confidence, and I am trying hard, if you're Ron Rivera, if you're the Commanders organization, to remind him, we wanted you. Forget the guys that didn't want you. We wanted you. We believe in you.
The guys that we tried to get before we got you.
And that's the other part of it. I think that is this is the result of Jimmy Garoppolo having that shoulder issue.
Yeah.
Because I think Garoppolo was kind of the plan C for a lot of these teams. When you look at the 2 big ones with Rodgers and Wilson, once they were off the table, it was then Jimmy G. Now you get to the issue with his throwing shoulder. You can't mess around with that. So then it became the decision of, do you want Carson Wentz or do you want Trubisky, Mariota in free agency?
And they went Wentz. And look, they're giving up 2/3. One of them conditional, could become a second. But they're also having to take on, you know, 28 mil.
That was the surprise. Yes. They didn't make Indy eat some of that.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, 28 mil is quickly becoming a bargain in terms of starting quarterbacks, since we just showed you the 40 mil, the guys that are making 40 mil a year. He's certainly not on that level. But I'm just wondering, in terms of level of quarterbacks, like, how do we feel like Carson Wentz is going to deal with, even though you said he's more talented than Taylor Heineke, who I believe is the only quarterback that's actually on their roster right now, how's he going to deal with, like, the whispers? You know, first turnover, he gets, time to go back to Taylor Heineke. Like, is that another situation where he's going to have to fend off a Nick Foles type in the background, you know?
How can we sit here confidently and say that that's gonna all work out? I can't. We have to see what happens. I just hope he gets off to a great start. That's gonna be big.
Yeah, it's gonna be
teammates
critical.
Love Taylor.
Yeah, teammates love him, and so because of that, he has to earn their respect through his work and just the way that he goes about his business. He still can turn the tide. He still can revive his career. He just has some work to do as a leader.
Yeah, like overall the numbers 27-7 last year, not bad. It's just some of those crucial plays and big time moments when the team needed it most. Couldn't come up with those. It is now time to move into the body shop, and we are looking at the AFC West this week, and now taking a look at the Kansas City Chiefs, putting them into the body shop. This is a team that obviously went deep into the playoffs once again, winning the division once again, but didn't get back to the Super Bowl this year. Buck, what can we do this offseason for the Chiefs that gets them back there?
Find a way to balance out the offense by adding maybe a more dynamic running back to the mix. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has not necessarily lived up to expectations as the bell cow running back, and so you have to find someone who can run these opponents out of this too deep coverage that they're playing to slow down Patrick Mahomes. With a better, more efficient, and effective running game, now you can open up the field and get back to playing Chiefs football, which is bombs array, a lot of sizzle, a lot of pizzazz, everyone loving Patrick Mahomes because he's able to throw it over the top of the defense. To do that, they have to have a runner that can set the table and force teams out that too deep shell.
Real quick on that, on a running back, considering what they have in Edwards-Helaire, what fits best? Is it a bigger body physical guy, or is it more of like the lightning in a bottle type of guy?
No, I think a bigger body physical guy.
Is that like a Hassan Haskins, a Brian Robinson type?
Look, man, I think even an Isaiah Spiller would be a nice fit for them. Someone that can do a little bit of everything so they don't have to bring them off the field. They have to get better. They need a more dynamic running game, a presence to change how defenses defend them.
Some people might use Mariano Rivera in this example, but
I'm going to use
Trevor Hoffman. And they need a closer. And to me, Bucky's talking about backs. That could be a 4-minute back that could end the game. I'm talking about getting somebody on the defensive line that can finish a game. When your offense does what they did against the Cincinnati Bengals and runs up a big lead, who can close out games for you? They need to address that defensive line, continue to add to that group, support Chris Jones with some more playmakers. So to me, I'm looking at that defensive line saying you can't have enough pass rushers. When you have an offense like these guys possess, go get one. Boye Mafe is an example of somebody that could be there when they pick. If he is, run that card up because that speed and burst off the edge, man, that looked great in KC.
I like that because he kind of reminds me of Eric Gagne a little bit, the way he can just close out the game.
Oh, hey, Eric Gagne. Whoa,
like something whoa, like whoa. That, right?
We got Dodger-Padre issues going on over here. Uh-huh. I was trying to stay out of this.
Wow.
I want to talk Jason, close it out.
Jason Isringhausen? Yeah. You need to bring the Cardinals into this?
Stop. Okay. Just stop. And don't dare, don't even think about Kenley Jansen. Leave that one alone. Go ahead.
Let's move on into this body shop, make some room for the LA Chargers. Have consistently been one of the more talented teams in this division, just have not found their way into the postseason here as of late. So let's figure out how we can do something for Justin Herbert to maximize one of the best quarterbacks in football right now.
Yeah, I think when you look at the offense, they're in pretty good shape. Yeah. They need a tackle, but I would say tight end is an area they could address. Jared Cook's a free agent, so being able to go out and get a tight end, I think you can do that in the middle rounds to complement Trey McKitty, who they took in the third round last year. But the defensive side of the ball, same dance as the Chiefs. They need more defensive linemen. You got Joey Bosa is kind of that anchor there. They need to support him and around him. They got a ton of free agents they have to make decisions on. Chenna Nwosu would be towards the top of that list for me, trying to get him back. But, man, that would be the two areas I would look. But specifically, I'd start on that defensive front.
Kaiser White and Chenna Nwosu both up on free agent deals. Feel like Nwosu's the bigger priority there?
I think we'll get into it later in the show about the depth of this linebacker class. Yeah. I think you can find one of those in the middle rounds. Edge rushers, even though it's a good group, you don't like those guys to leave the building.
Look, I think the needs are very similar to the Kansas City Chiefs. You have to be able to stop the run. You have to be able to do that because it's important that they're not able to allow teams to kind of just leak it out the way they've been when they needed to get off the field. But also, being able to add another weapon in the backfield to Austin Eckler. They need a big physical back, someone that enables them to grind it out when necessary. Bigger back, more physical. It's about being able to play playoff football down the stretch. I think that certainly will help them.
Yeah, going back to the D-line real quick. You said bigger with backs. They need to get bigger on that front, too.
Interior D-line.
Just get bigger. Yeah. Linval Joseph's a free agent. They need to just get big guys. They play with a light box. You play with a light box, you got to be big up front.
Sounds like there's some guys in Georgia that fit that bill. Big, fast, physical, if that's the sort of thing you're interested in your interior defensive lineman, we are definitely getting into that. Our takeaways from the combine are on the way here. In fact, we are going to head back to Indianapolis. Metaphorically, of course. Look, all 4 days of the combine brought some major highlights for sure as we kick off our Elite Eight segment here today on Move the Sticks. And we're giving you our eight biggest impressions from the workouts that we saw in Indianapolis. And I guess one word to describe everything would be fast. And the edge rushers certainly fit that bill, Buck.
Yeah, the edge rushers are certainly there, and they are plentiful. They're all over the place. And when you watch these guys work out, I mean, they're superheroes coming off the edge, from Aiden Hutchinson being able to make moves. We saw Kayvon Thibodeau put up a very impressive time. But then even going down the line, Jermaine Johnson, Boye Mafe, on and on and on. There are so many guys that you're able to target to really upgrade your pass rush. I think this is a defensive coordinator's delight. You're going to be able to get a hunter to get after these quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, it's loaded. I mean, it's a great group. I think we could see, you know, five of them potentially go in the top 10 or 11 picks, which is just kind of indicative of what kind of group it is. To me, though, the biggest takeaway, it encompasses some of that, is Georgia. Just Georgia. I mean, what a year for Georgia.
Pretty good word.
You talk about the Atlanta Braves win the World Series. The Georgia Bulldogs win the National Championship. You just won the Combine Championship because that was – I'd never seen anything like that with those guys. Trayvon Walker, we tried to tell people that it was coming. Mm-hmm. Devontae Wyatt, we tried to explain to people that it was coming. But then all of a sudden, while we were talking about those guys, that big monster Jordan Davis showed up and stole the whole show. So, no, it was – and it was not just that group. It was then Channing Tindall, the linebacker, jumping 42 inches. Quay Walker having an outstanding workout. Seen, who ended up running the 4.3s as a safety. It was just one guy after another. And Jermaine Johnson would make it honorary Georgia Bulldog after having transferred from there. I've never seen – one school's class on one side of the ball dominate that event like we saw Georgia do.
Yeah, and look, I think if you're an offensive lineman watching those D linemen work out, it's like, man, I better go get some beef jerky.
Oh, nice.
I mean, you guys had some fun with Cam Jurgens right up in the booth, you and Rich. I mean, he had a fantastic workout, but let off what was a very impressively athletic group of offensive linemen. I mean, guys, we had 12 O-linemen run a sub-5-second 40-yard dash, which doubled the previous record since 03, which was 6 back in 13. More guys ran sub-5-40s this year than the previous three combines combined. Like, I mean, Ike Ekwonu going sub-5. I mean, Jurgens, who had a terrific field workout and went sub-5 in the 40. I mean, Dari Rosenthal from Kentucky was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, this is a really athletic group, and, well, they had to be considering what was going the next day with the D-linemen.
No doubt. And Jurgens, I'll say this right now, don't be shocked if he gets picked ahead of Tyler Linderbaum. Don't be shocked if that happens.
Really?
He's got that kind of grades. People love him around the league. And he had a phenomenal workout. He's longer.
That's a first round
he's
grade.
He's healthier.
Yes, it
he's
is.
Gonna find. I think he's gonna go early in the second round.
Yes, it is.
We'll see what happens. Around maybe late first, early second. All right, let's keep it moving here. I'm gonna go with these day two off the ball linebackers.
Yeah.
That to me was a major takeaway. And so
when day two of the draft.
Day two of the draft. Yeah. So when you look at the first round guys, we kind of assume Devin Lloyd's gonna go in the first round, N'Kobe Dean. I think they might get punished a little bit for this next group of players. When you start looking at Quay Walker, who we just talked about, Christian Harris from Alabama, Troy Anderson, Montana State, Leo Chenal, Wisconsin, Brian Asamoah, Oklahoma, Damone Clark, LSU, Chad Muma, Montana, or from Wyoming.
Yeah.
These guys are all day two, second, third round picks who are big, long, fast. So to me, when I look at that depth, I think some teams who might have been in the linebacker business in round one, they might say, we'll go somewhere else in round one. We'll come back and circle around, get one of these guys in day two.
No, look, I'm with you. You're talking about defense. I'm going to continue to stay with that theme. How about the defensive backs and the speed? We saw early in the combine, the wide receivers put on a show, all that straight line speed and everything. But then we saw the DBs show up. And as I've always contended, the best athletes on the field are always the DBs. They're the decathletes. They're the only ones that start going backwards before they go forwards. And we saw a lot of impressive workouts on the day. We saw Sauce Gardner. We saw on and on and on. The list of guys that could play and do it. And the movement skills were so impressive that you're going to be able to get a starter day two, second and third round, guys that can come off the field and make immediate contributions on the edges, because they not only have speed, they have size, and a lot of these guys are outstanding tacklers as well.
So you guys have talked about this on the pod before with Matt Rhule, who's been on the pod back when he was at Baylor, wanted speed.
Oh.
So I think what happened down in Waco was that they they didn't do spring football in the spring. They just let everybody run track because there was a Baylor 4x1 team out on the turf at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis this week. I mean, the four guys that ran from Baylor, all of them ran sub-4.5. Oh, yeah. And Kalen Barnes goes up and hits us with the 4.23, which, of course, the fastest time we've seen from a DB since 2003, and one of the fastest we've seen all time. Same for Tyquan Thornton, who went 4.28. Big, tall receiver, too. I mean, like, it was impressive the way that the Baylor Bears were lighting up the turf. JT Woods with the 4.36 40 as a safety. Tristan Ebner, 4.43. I mean, like, they were rolling, guys. And so one thing you know when you're going to take a dude and fill out his name and his card and you're going to fill out that school as Baylor – we know you're getting some speed.
Yeah, it was impressive, the show that they put on. I'm going to go to the running back position and say I thought two guys just kind of elevated them above everybody else. And Breece Hall, no surprise at all. He worked out like a champ. He was outstanding. But then it's not just what he did. To me, it was a battle of, okay, who else gets in that conversation with him? Mm-hmm. I like Spiller a lot from A&M, but Kenneth Walker, guys, he was phenomenal. As fast as it ran, as good as the field workout was, and we talked about this the other day, Buck, talk to Mel Tucker about him, and you get the character and the intangibles off the charts. So both those guys, I think, hear their name called early on the second day. That second-round picks, high second-round picks.
And this second round has been the sweet spot where we found these guys that have been very successful in the league. Jonathan Taylor was a second-round pick and had a ton of success. But I'm going to go to the quarterbacks. And as much as we raved about the quarterbacks during our time that week at the Combine, maybe the quarterback class spooked some of the executives around the league. Because as soon as we get back, we just land in Indianapolis and the flurry of quarterback activity takes place. Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, we now see Carson Wentz. And so maybe, in spite of the impressive showing at the Combine, maybe guys decided they will wait and see at the quarterback position rather than dive in with this class. And so we will see how many of these guys go in the first round. It was speculated. Maybe three would go. I don't know now because the dance card is filling up pretty quickly.
Yeah, but when you still look at the teams,
Carolina, Steelers, Saints.
There's still a good number of teams that don't have their guy. Even though these big names have kind of scattered, there's still some teams in a need here. So
Colts.
I don't know. It's going to be fascinating. I think we're going to see a couple of them go in the first round. Now, the question is, who the heck are they?
Is Kenny because still QB1?
For me, he is. Entered the process as QB1. Exit the process as QB1.
I think he's the best prospect, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a wild card because the Seattle Seahawks getting in 9, that changes the equation depending on what happens if they get a veteran free agent or if they go in the draft. So I don't know because Kenny Pickett can play that style, but, man, they had Russell Wilson for a decade. Do they want to go back
Malik Willis intrigue them there at 9 if they don't get Deshaun Watson?
I think Malik Willis would be an intriguing prospect, even though I'm saying he's not ready, but I think he would certainly entice them based on the traits.
Mm. Man, we keep talking about how this isn't like the strongest QB class in terms of what we saw last year. It might be the most intriguing, though, just because we just don't know, you know, where these guys are going to end up. So here we go. There is some money to be spent. Interestingly enough, the Indianapolis Colts, who just shed about $28 million of Carson Wentz, have $69 million, almost $70 million in cap space to lead the way. Dolphins, Seahawks, right behind them at just over 50 and just under 50 mil to spend. Jets and Chargers up there in the top 5 as well. Now, when we look at the Indianapolis Colts, talked a little bit about Carson Wentz now out of there. They're going to need a quarterback here in some way, shape, or form. Think about the player in the position vacancies that they have for premier players. Quarterback is one. Think we might have a good edge rusher in Kwity Paye, but they need a left tackle. Probably need a marquee cornerback too. So while they have a good roster, Bucky, they still need some top-flight premier players at big-time positions.
Oh, they certainly need big-time players at premier positions because this is a team that is really solid. Offensive line is good. They got good pieces throughout the roster. But, look, man, the quarterback piece is
a huge important.
It's a huge piece. So I'm trying to take my rose-colored glasses off. But maybe Mitchell Trubisky.
Hey, where do you go to school again? Where do you go to school, Buck?
Oh, he was just having to share degrees at the same
time
at North Carolina. But in terms of this, they probably could get him at a nice price. Won't cost them too much to be able to get him. It might be more significant than anyone thinks. But You get a solid quarterback who can play behind that offensive line in the running game. He's likely not going to turn the ball over a lot. And it would give the Colts an opportunity to continue to build up their team because they still were just a handful of plays away from being a playoff team. I think they are a playoff team, even if Mitchell Trubisky is the starting quarterback.
Get on the phone with Terron Armstead and get him in the building. Just plug and play left tackle. This offensive line has been a strength of this football team, but that has been a glaring hole at left tackle. You fill it with the premier free agent on the market, in my opinion, Terron Armstead. You got the money, just get it done.
There's some teams that are going to want his services now. I mean, Seahawks need a left tackle. Bengals, arguably, if they want to move Jonah Williams around, could need a left tackle. You have to spend some money to get Terron Armstead, and clearly the Colts have that cash. Let's get to the Dolphins here, because they've drafted some offensive linemen early in the last couple of drafts. Feels like they could still use some there. But on the defensive side, they've got some free agent in Emmanuel Ogba they got to figure out, and that might dictate where they go in free agency here.
Yeah, I love Jalen Phillips. Thought he was the most talented edge rusher in last year's draft class. But get him a running mate on the other side. Chandler Jones would be outstanding. Can you imagine him going down there?
That would be ridiculous.
Those two guys coming off of the edge. I saw a quote the other day where he said, "I've mastered pass rushing." And I saw it, and my first thought was,
disagree?
My first thought was, wow, that's pretty arrogant. My second thought was, he's probably right. Yeah, he's pretty much mastered it. So he's going to be in high demand, even though he's over the age of 30. He's still playing at a very high level.
Well, look, I like that thought, because you want to make sure that Josh Ward, defensive coordinator, has enough weapons to throw out those talented offense in the division. But what about offensively? If you're going all in on Tua Tagovailoa, yes, Terron Armstead would be in play. But how about Laken Tomlinson, a guard?
Good,
because if you're going to run the football, why not bring somebody who's very familiar to the coaching staff? And so Laken Tomlinson really emerged, played well for the San Francisco 49ers. Now, if you're able to address the offensive line, run the football effectively, you give Tua Tagovailoa an opportunity to be an effective playmaker.
Equal opportunity. You went North Carolina alma mater, then you come back with Duke
Laken
Tomlinson. I mean, coming off last weekend. I don't mind.
Yeah,
I don't mind
talking about Duke. On the whole
I don't mind
deal,
about, talking
he?
About Duke.
His last, Coach K's last game, right?
You guys
that spoiled
it.
His last.
Yeah, send him out.
Huh?
Send him out.
Wow.
Send him out with a nail.
Oh, just so disrespectful. So, by the way, some other guards that could be, you know, thought of in that way, Brandon Scherff, Alex Kappa, Ryan Jensen as a center for teams that need the interior presence could be real interesting there. All right, for the Seahawks, offensive line sound familiar?
Yeah, I'm going to steal one of those names. Ryan Jensen, to me, would be plug and play right now. Postick is a free agent, so you plug him in. And then you also look at Joe Noteboom as somebody I think is intriguing, because when he's got an opportunity to play, I think he's done some good things for the Rams. So he's one of those sneaky players who doesn't have a ton of experience, but could surprise you with what he makes, because you get a little bit more athletic there.
And considering the tenuous future of Andrew Whitworth, if you're the Rams, you might try to be hanging on to Joe Noteboom, knowing you know what you got there.
They've got some other dudes they got to pay as well.
They can't pay everybody. And so when I think about the Seahawks, I think they get back to their identity. It has to be about the defense. And so adding a pass rusher, maybe a Hassan Reddick, to come off the edge, someone that gives them energy,
he's going
to
get paid,
gives them production, and it enables them to get back to playing the style of defense they want to play. Because remember, in their heyday, they were never about blitzing. They were about rushing with four, playing coverage, that cover three behind those four-man rushes. If they're able to do that, now they can play better defense against a division that certainly has some intriguing quarterbacks.
Can I just let the nation know, though, who the Pacific Northwest wants to come in at that quarterback position? You see the needs there, number one quarterback?
Yeah.
Oh, they want Minshew, baby. Let's bring Minshew back to the Northwest. Let's go.
No.
Let's get Gardner Minshew. Let him get
not
in some
that
competition.
Far from Coleman, right?
Come on. Come on home. Let's
get
go.
Get on back. Oh, I love it. That's big time right there. All right. So those are some teams with some free agency money to spend. All right, Brent Musburger. So how do we hit the jackpot for the Raiders in the offseason here? Sticking them in the body shop here. Remember, we already kind of talked about what the Broncos need to do now that they got the biggest piece of the puzzle in the quarterback and Russell Wilson. So we are using this body shop segment to focus on the Las Vegas Raiders. Bucky, where do you see the Raiders' biggest checklist items this offseason?
They need more big plays in the passing game. And the way that you can get big plays is adding more speed to the lineup. Chris Olave from Ohio State would be a perfect fit in this offense, being able to stretch the field, making plays. The guy knows how to put the ball in the paint. And when you think about Josh McDaniels' offense, they really covet route runners. Outstanding route runner with big playability. To me, he would be a perfect fit for for the
Raiders. Is he there at 22 is the question after a fantastic combine. But that would, you know, that would certainly be a nice get for the Vegas Raiders.
No doubt. By the way, Tom Telesco, general manager of the Chargers, will text Matt Money Smith when we play the Raiders because we call the games, me and Money, and he'll say, it's Brent Musburger week.
For Money, it's Musburger week, baby.
Try and gas him up a little bit. You got to bring your A game. It's Musburger.
That's good.
I'm going to go Travis Jones as an interior defensive lineman. I think would be a great fit for the Raiders with where they pick. Mm. He put on a show at the combine, guys. 325 plus pounds and was moving. And the field workout was outstanding, coming off of an outstanding Senior Bowl. So to me, give him that interior guy to complement Max Crosby and Ngakoue on the edges.
Yeah, and in terms of culture, Bucky, that Josh McDaniels is looking for, like, how does that shape what they want to do, both in free agency and the draft?
Well, the one thing we know about anyone who comes out of New England, they're really focus on attention to detail.
Yeah.
And for the Raiders, that has always been an issue. Team that typically is one of the tops when it comes to penalties. Execution isn't always consistent. Well, Josh McDaniels comes from a program where those things are coveted. I think that's a bit of a culture shift potentially for the Raiders. Can those guys embrace probably a more rigid, a more structured way of going about doing their business?
I just can't look at a picture of Coach McDaniels and not think Hunter Renfrow is going to catch 200 balls in this offense.
Oh, a million.
He might catch two. I mean, how many balls is he going to catch?
A million balls, for sure.
I mean, he's got everything he wants. He's got the tight end and Waller. He's got the slot wide out in Renfrow. What else does he need, right?
And by the way, nobody's going to be talking about the Raiders this offseason with what Denver did and the two big quarterbacks with the Chargers and
Lurking
the Chiefs.
Lurking in the tall grass there are the Las Vegas Raiders. All right, so they are in the body shop, and they're going to come out a contender in this division. And some moments at the combine certainly might impact what we see happen and names that get called in Las Vegas. And we also had a moment at the combine that wasn't related to a player that was participating. The Jacksonville Jaguars placing a franchise tag now for a second season on their left tackle, Cam Robinson, who was a second round pick a few years ago out of Alabama. So we'd kind of thought that the Jaguars might be moving towards another left tackle from Alabama and Evan Neal. Now they franchise Cam for a second straight year. Does that take tackle off the board at number one?
So there are a couple of things that could be at play. I would say, let's look at the offensive line. Let's think about Doug Peterson and what he had at his disposal in Philadelphia. They always had one of the top offensive lines. So maybe this is a move that is a stopgap maneuver that allows you to have Cam Robinson on one side, Walker Little on the other side. But maybe it frees you up to take a guy like Ike Ekwonu, maybe someone who's not quite as polished, but as a big body, maybe you play him inside a guard for a year, then move him outside left tackle the second year. I think everything that you're doing for Jacksonville is about protecting the quarterback, might be about fortifying that offensive line.
So it doesn't take offensive line off the board at number one. Where do you feel like they're going now, Deej?
Well, to me, Bucky brings up a good point. Evan Neal's played guard at Alabama as well for a whole season. So you could put either one of those guys inside for a year. I think, though, signs are pointing towards an edge rusher, and I think that edge rusher is Aiden Hutchinson. To me, it's park that thing right in the dead middle of the fairway. And when you go look at that combine workout, don't look at 40 times. Nobody cares inside personnel rooms about the 40 time. Look at the 10 time, which was really good, and the 3-cone, which was outstanding.
And the workout, which was also phenomenal.
No doubt.
But now, how does that affect the draft board of the Detroit Lions, who our Tom Pelissero is reporting will release Trey Flowers, big free agency acquisition a couple of years ago, next week. So maybe they go edge rusher number two. They're at number two. But it's time now to, I think, go in the sticks.
Here we go.
Yeah, we got to see the forest through the trees here. So take us in the sticks. What do you got?
Well, literally, it's in the sticks, and I know it well because it's Appalachian State. It's linebacker DeMarco Jackson, who, to me, is an outstanding player. Has a chance to go. I think could sneak into the third round. Probably the fourth round is a sweet spot. Ran 4.55 at the combine. He can rush the quarterback as a blitzer. He can cover. Had a great Senior Bowl. So, to me, I think he's somebody that just get to know the name a little bit. He's going to be a good player.
I mean, how could we forget the name? I mean, the guy is Mr. All App State. And here we go, like one of our first shows back in studio, and we're talking about App State guys, Mountaineers, right out the gate.
I just like Micah McFadden, Ty Freifogel, Hendershot. Like, do I need to, like, rattle off just to fit in here for a little bit?
By the way, I met your head coach in the elevator.
Tom Allen, great man.
Phenomenal guy.
Yeah.
Super nice guy.
He lost his voice.
I asked him about you. He said, never heard of you.
That is a bold-faced lie. You guys, man. So yeah, we're just having some fun with our. We got some Homer love all over the place today. We got the UNC love. We got the App State love.
Yeah.
Are we going to get another quarterback move here?
Yeah. What do we got? Who's next? I feel like all the big quarterback moves that we've been talking about for years now finally happened, right?
Now I figured Sam Darnold's going to happen there. Let's
see. What are the Panthers going to do with quarterback? That's a subject for another episode here on Move the Sticks. Thanks so much for being with us here this Thursday. For Brucky Brooks, Daniel Jeremiah, I'm Rhett Lewis, our hardworking crew behind the cameras. We appreciate all you guys.
Coffee mugs.
See you next week.